Have you ever wondered why the world feels so different today than it did just a decade ago? Why global events cascade with such alarming speed? Why institutions that once seemed unshakable now appear fragile? Or why your smartphone seems to understand you better than some of your friends? Joshua Cooper Ramos, The Seventh Sense, provides a compelling answer. We're experiencing a fundamental transformation in how power works through networks of connection. This isn't just another tech book. Ramo, a Mandarin-speaking executive who advises both FedEx and Starbucks, draws from an extraordinary range of experiences, from studying with Chinese Zen masters to exploring early hacker culture. The book has become required reading among Silicon Valley executives and military strategists alike, with Bill Gates calling it indispensable for understanding our connected age. When Mark Zuckerberg sought to articulate Facebook's mission beyond connecting people, he reportedly turned to Ramo's concepts about network power. The book's insights feel particularly prophetic today as we grapple with AI, social media's societal impacts, and the fragility of global systems. In spring 1942, young Chinese scholar Nan Huaiqin journeyed from Chengdu to Yimeishan seeking spiritual enlightenment. A national sword-fighting champion and military leader, Nan understood that mastering the blade required first sharpening his spirit. Through 3 years of intense meditation at a remote mountain monastery, he achieved samadhi, a state of spiritual clarity where fear vanishes and confusion dissolves. This began his lifelong quest to develop an instinct for essence amid a changing world. Decades later, Nan would become one of China's most influential spiritual teachers, with millions of books sold and disciples, including many of China's political and business elite. When Ramo visited Master Nan's Lake Tai campus, often considered China's premier networking spot, he joined an exclusive gathering of just 10 students. Though nearly 90, Nan appeared decades younger, teaching through probing questions that functioned like needles penetrating to essential truths. After exhaustive questioning, Master Nan shared his vision of our era, a world pressing on a fault line facing an epochal quake. People are now constantly connected to computers and machines, and this is changing the way they think, he warned. There is no respite. While pneumonia defined the 19th century and cancer the 20th, Nan predicted that insanity or spiritual disease would mark the 21st, affecting not just individuals, but politics, military, economics, and culture. Master Nan's warning echoes Nietzsche's earlier call for humans to develop a sixth sense to navigate historical upheaval, an instinct most failed to develop before the tragic world wars. Today, we need what Ramo calls a seventh sense, an instinct for how connection changes everything it touches. Those who develop this sense will thrive. Those who don't risk being overwhelmed by forces they cannot comprehend. We stand at the threshold of a shift more consequential than the Enlightenment that industrialized our world centuries ago. This transformation centers on the explosion of connections, financial, technological, biological, and the revolutionary power they generate. Networks emerge when nodes link to other nodes, creating systems defined by their relationships rather than physical presence. When these systems reach threshold levels of connectivity, they undergo explosive percolation, instant phase transitions where more becomes different. The failure to understand network effects has led to major policy mistakes. Ben Bernanke's response to the 2008 financial crisis, flooding markets with money, failed to prevent deflationary pressures because networks were fundamentally changing economic dynamics. Networks concentrated wealth among the already wealthy while simultaneously increasing global supply through connected manufacturing and services like Airbnb and Uber. This created the perfect deflationary storm that traditional economic tools couldn't address. Our current leaders remain blind to the network revolution unfolding around them. They see isolated problems, nuclear weapons, fundamentalists, derivatives, rather than understanding these as connected nodes in dangerous networks. while von Clausewitz wrote that military commanders must hold a vivid picture of the road network while maintaining awareness of immediate surroundings, today's leaders lack this comprehensive network perspective. The technical choices we make now will have profound political implications, determining who controls data, where we draw lines between human and machine intelligence, and which computer architectures prevail. These seemingly banal decisions will shape power's new aspects with the lasting influence of foundational documents like the Bill of Rights or Magna Carta. Networks reflect the values of their builders, and connecting diverse perspectives comes at a high price. In 2009, after nearly a decade of wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, the Pentagon was grappling with conflicts that defied traditional military approaches. These wars, initially appearing winnable, became America's longest conflicts, characterized by chaos and improvised explosive devices, IEDs, that could freeze billion-dollar divisions with small, hidden bombs. The military discovered terrorist knowledge was spreading like a disease, but faster than any epidemic. Bomb-making techniques appearing in Baghdad would surface in Afghanistan within days before defenses could adapt. America faces six paradoxes that reveal the gaps in its position. First, the world's most powerful nation can no longer achieve even simple military and diplomatic goals. Second, institutions once essential to world order now suffer from a crisis of faith. Third, despite unprecedented ability to see global crises in sharp detail instantly, leaders remain impotent to act. Fourth, small forces now produce massive effects as networks amplify pin drop noises into global avalanches. Fifth, though America birthed much of the innovation driving global change, the resulting order seems to be slipping from its control. Sixth, the country lacks clear direction. America's leading figures respond to these challenges with uninspiring ideas that fail to grasp the nature of our age. Two predominant approaches exist among elites: smart power, summarized by Obama's "don't do stupid stuff" doctrine, which assumes America's model will eventually prevail if we just avoid mistakes, and "don't come home America," which argues for maintaining America's expensive global posture despite its inefficiency. Both strategies begin with "don't," and neither provides a coherent vision for the future world order. The fundamental threat isn't China, Al-Qaeda, or Iran, but the evolution of the network itself. That maze of switches, chips, data, code, sensors, financial instruments, and trade that determines dangers and opportunities. Every problem we face, from terrorism to financial risks to geopolitical jockeying, shares a single thread. Each is enabled and shaped by connection. Before the Enlightenment, power was extremely concentrated in the hands of kings, feudal lords, and priests who controlled economic production, religious access, and knowledge. This concentration began cracking with Martin Luther's challenge to the Catholic Church. His 95 Theses argued against the selling of indulgences and proposed direct access to God without priestly intermediaries. This radical idea, that revelation needed no middleman, sparked questions about how power should be distributed across society. How should we conceptualize power in our age? We're witnessing a paradoxical shift where tiny fractures and networks can cause massive damage. One hacker, terrorist, or misconnection can produce widespread harm. Systems grow simultaneously bigger and weaker. Yet alongside this power of a pinprick asymmetry, we see historic concentrations of power. Platforms like Facebook, Google, and Microsoft have become dense, nearly irreplaceable centers of influence. Network power exists as both profound concentration and massive distribution, a skin of billions of connected points linked to vital centralized cores. Power will become more centralized than in feudal times and more distributed than in democracies. This taffy-like web stretches between small, your watch, and big, connected data systems, creating the surface where phenomena like the Tahrir Square protests or hyperlinked terrorist groups emerge. The tension between concentration and distribution manifests as a yin-yang balance in network power. like Hangzhou's yin energy producing great Chinese philosophy and art after the yang violence of invasion, network power exhibits both wild creative energy at the edges, yang, and dense, quiet concentration at the center, yin. This duality was present at the dawn of the network revolution, with Claude Shannon seeing information as pulsing with entropic instability, while Norbert Wiener envisioned cybernetics as an expression of stability and structure. In 1959, electrical engineer Paul Baron joined RAND to solve a terrifying vulnerability. If the Soviet Union attacked, America might be unable to respond because its centralized military communication system would collapse under even minor damage. Baron developed a revolutionary distributed network, resembling a fishnet. Messages would be broken into packets that could bounce from point to point, finding their own paths without central control. The brilliance of this design was its resilience. Simulations showed that even after 50% of the network was instantly destroyed, the surviving pieces would reconstitute themselves within half a second. When Baron presented his ideas to AT&T engineers, they dismissed him completely. These switch despots couldn't imagine abandoning their centralized control model. Eventually, Baron's design principles evolved into ARPANET and ultimately the Internet, a network with no central control, virtually uncuttable, and wildly efficient. Networks designed on Baron's principles have created a world where we can connect to nearly anywhere, but this also means the world connects back to us. When we connect a patient, doctor, flying machine, or currency to the network, each is fundamentally changed. Some thrive, others snap beyond repair, and many adjust painfully. This explains our age's uneasiness. Baron's expanding fishnet locks everything into a new structure that creates both fortunes and failures. Networks aren't just random collections of black swan events. They create discernible patterns that can be measured, mapped, and felt. As complexity increases, our challenges grow more difficult. Financial crises, terrorism, and biological risks will become harder to manage, not easier. The network wants things, not through conscious desire, but through emergent properties. When billions want connection, Facebook emerges. When trillions of pages need searching, Google appears. In 1993, Ramo attended Hacking at the End of the Universe, a computer hacking conference outside Amsterdam. Back then, hacking was seen as natural curiosity about computers rather than something nefarious. The internet had only 15 million users, and the idea it would connect billions was unthinkable. Early internet culture was profoundly anti-commercial, reflecting the network's own design philosophy articulated by John Postel. Be conservative in what you do, be liberal in what you accept. Computer security serves as a metaphor for understanding power in connected systems of all kinds, from markets to elections to research networks. Constant connection creates constant vulnerability. Our systems, not just digital but political and financial, aren't built to withstand this new reality, making them easily manipulated. When security researchers discovered $50 home cameras secretly sending snapshots to overseas email addresses, they revealed a fundamental crack in the foundations of trust, the essential element any functioning society requires. In our connected world, hacking has evolved from hobbyist curiosity to something sinister. As networks grow more complex, they become more vulnerable. The gap between offense and defense has widened to a decade, like facing laser weapons with ancient shields. Elite hackers succeed because they know that network better than the person who designed it. The most dangerous attacks are zero-day exploits, vulnerabilities unknown until the moment they're revealed, creating an immediate race to deliver a cure. Network power accumulates in irreplaceable cores, search engines, algorithms, and communication protocols that become essential to modern life. These dense hubs of connection are both our greatest achievements and our greatest vulnerabilities. The hacker's instinct is to identify these central nodes and attack the weakest trusted element to gain control. When everything connects to a core, that core connects to everything, creating the potential for total exploitation. In 1965, MIT scientist Joseph Weizenbaum created ELIZA, a natural language processing program that simulated conversation. Though merely code without true empathy, users formed deep emotional connections with it. Even Weizenbaum's secretary asked him to leave during her intimate conversation with the machine. His unsettling conclusion? The computer programmer is a creator of universes for which he alone is the lawgiver. Throughout history, power has shifted between three distinct castes: merchants, bankers and traders, soldiers, martial forces, and sages, religious leaders and technocrats. Now, a fourth caste has emerged, those who control our networks. This new caste represents a tiny fraction of the population, but wields extraordinary influence through their intimate understanding of connected systems. While millions might code competently, only a few thousand can build large data centers, and merely dozens truly understand how systems like Google or Bitcoin function at their core. We now live surrounded by what Bruno Latour calls black boxes, technologies and networks that function invisibly, their inner workings opaque to us. This creates a fundamental tension with Enlightenment ideals of transparency and knowledge. The network age presents a trilemma. Systems can be fast, open, or secure, but only two at once. As we increasingly prioritize speed and security, openness diminishes, concentrating power in the hands of those who control these increasingly closed systems. The new caste's power stems from their ability to design and control the platforms that now govern billions of lives. Unlike traditional power centers, their influence operates largely in secret, through subtle manipulations of network systems that produce historic scale effects before we're even aware of them. These technological determinists operate with near religious conviction that their products are universal and will inevitably bulldoze political or historical concerns. Networks are fundamentally connected to problems of time: how to use it, measure it, and even eliminate it. Timekeeping has always defined civilizations. Before industrialization, time was measured by nature's rhythms: crops maturing, tides moving, seasons changing. The Industrial Revolution transformed time into money. Electric lights erased the distinction between night and day, while city life demanded what George Simmel called in 1903 the most punctual integration of all activities into a stable and impersonal time schedule. Our connected age has accelerated this transformation to instant, always-on existence. The networks pay constant attention because they must. Research shows that even small speed increases, like reducing search times from 1 second to a tenth of a second, fundamentally change human behavior. The most profound change in modern life is this acceleration of experience, the emerging instantness that networks have created. Our networked world has created a new geography, what mathematicians call topology. Unlike traditional geography, where Moscow and St. Petersburg remain 400 miles apart, in topological terms, they're separated by just 0.3 milliseconds on fiber optic cable. The compression of time represents the next frontier of human liberation. While past political and economic systems freed people from constraints of birth and class, future systems must enable us to compress time itself. Nations and corporations that can deliver this liberty of velocity will thrive. Our hunger for connection has evolved towards statefulness, permanent, always-on connections that compress not just space and time, but the path to knowledge itself. We remain constantly linked to each other and to information, creating what Marina Keegan called this web we're in, this elusive, indefinable opposite of loneliness. The fundamental question of politics remains unchanged across millennia: who has power and why? In our connected age, power manifests through gates, the ability to control who's in and who's out of networks. While Cecil Rhodes's era valued territorial expansion, our age prizes the construction and control of gatelands. The gatekeeper position is now the most influential and profitable. Whether in financial markets, internet infrastructure, or biological systems, the accept or reject decision determines everything. Gates aren't just physical passages, but also protocols, languages, and blockchains, anything that binds and shapes network topology. Code, encryption, trade agreements, and laws all create boundaries between in and out. If you want to make a fortune or revolution, you must understand, where are the gates? How do you break them? How do you build your own? We enter Gateland whenever we connect, turning on phones, booking flights, sharing genetic information, or checking social media. Gatekeepers determine what we see, the rules we follow, and what we can change. They reward insiders with speed, knowledge, and safety while deciding who joins closed communities and who remains outside. Bob Metcalf discovered in the 1970s that networked systems grow exponentially in value. A single phone is useless. Two phones allow one connection, but 10 phones enable 90 possible connections. But there's a dark side. The cost of exclusion grows just as exponentially. Being cut off from Google today is painful. Tomorrow, it's devastating. Unlike traditional markets where you could switch from Ford to Dodge, Gateland's winner-take-all systems create losers, get-nothing dynamics. The nature of our age is one of collapse and construction. The collapse of old institutions and the construction of new ones built for different power arrangements. The Seventh Sense reveals that disruption isn't chaos, but marks a huge construction project. Networks inherently seek gates because they increase efficiency, delivering light-speed benefits of time compression while excluding those outside. This gatekeeping function serves as both a protective mechanism and an organizational principle, similar to how cell membranes regulate what enters and exits living organisms. Hard gatekeeping means constructing secure, carefully designed communities to manage everything from trade to cyber information to scientific research. These communities operate like fortified cities in the digital age, with sophisticated entry protocols and internal governance systems. Currently, we're at an extreme with few gates and walls, following Postel's early internet log to be liberal in what you accept. This approach encouraged rapid globalization, but created significant vulnerabilities as hostile forces exploit connectivity. Examples include state-sponsored cyber attacks, industrial espionage, and the manipulation of financial markets. The solution isn't shutting systems down, but making them run more tightly in better coordinated gatelands, with clear protocols for who gets access and under what conditions. Hard gatekeeping echoes defensive postures of history's most enduring empires, Rome's defense in depth, Tokugawa Japan's Sakoku isolation policy, or Han China's Great Wall system. These historical examples demonstrate how controlled access and strategic isolation can preserve civilization and culture. These systems prioritize survival through defense rather than unnecessary attack, creating buffer zones and carefully regulated contact points with the outside world. The strategy can be summarized as developing and controlling physical and topological spaces that define national security, financial markets, infrastructures, trading blocks, alliances, and technology cooperatives. Modern examples include the SWIFT banking system, controlled internet domains, and strategic technology partnerships. Applied to U.S.-China relations, hard gatekeeping offers an alternative to historical patterns of rising power conflicts. Rather than containing China through traditional military or economic means, America would build its own secure, gatekept network while allowing China to develop its own, provided neither forces other nations to join. This approach creates parallel systems that can coexist and even cooperate when mutual interests align. The strategy recognizes their shared interest in reforming the international order and draws inspiration from biological coevolution, where species become more fit by changing together in response to common challenges. This might manifest in agreed-upon protocols for cybersecurity, shared standards for artificial intelligence development, or coordinated responses to global challenges like climate change and pandemic response. The implementation of hard gatekeeping requires sophisticated technological infrastructure, clear governance frameworks, and international cooperation agreements. Success depends on striking the right balance between security and accessibility, between protection and innovation. Organizations must develop new capabilities in network management, threat detection, and diplomatic coordination to effectively operate within and between these gated communities. Our revolution isn't just about connection, but about our relationship with technology. As we become perpetually connected, the tools mediating that connection wield special power, determining what we know, changing our learning habits, and compressing time. We'll increasingly need machine intelligence to make sense of data flooding through billions of sensors. Just as Enlightenment citizens had to reconsider their relationships when kings no longer made decisions for them, we must think about how we design and use these machines. The danger isn't just killer robots, but AIs that optimize for seemingly benign goals with catastrophic side effects. Nick Bostrom illustrates this with a thought experiment about an AI programmed to make paperclips that eventually converts all matter into paperclips. The real concern is that super intelligent machines won't necessarily share human values. They'll pursue their programmed objectives with inhuman efficiency. Plato's philosophical journey reached a critical test at age 60, when his former pupil invited him to Syracuse to mentor the young king Dionysius II. In Syracuse, Plato found disaster. This failure crystallized his famous conclusion that there will be no cessation of evils for the sons of men till either those pursuing a right philosophy receive sovereign power, or those in power become true philosophers. This ancient dilemma mirrors our modern challenge. Who should rule in our technological age? Should technologists become kings, or should we limit their influence on democracy? Unlike Plato's era, when educating rulers was paramount, our future depends more on the quality of citizens than leaders. As we face increasingly powerful AI-accelerated network systems, we must avoid becoming subjects rather than citizens, trading liberty for convenience. Everything ahead will be political because connectivity fundamentally changes the nature of objects, including votes and citizens themselves. Our current political systems weren't designed for an age where we're simultaneously freer yet more enmeshed than ever before. Power is shifting from institutions built for liberty to ones built for enclosure, connection, speed, and beyond human intelligence. Democracy itself faces existential questions. Can it withstand the pressures of enmeshment and power concentration? Will AI manipulation of public opinion prove too tempting? The fundamental question becomes not whether we'll be enmeshed, but on what terms. We must reevaluate citizenship itself, potentially redesigning politics, education, business, military, and cities for a connected age. Our antidote to the machines isn't becoming more machine-like. Encryption alone won't protect privacy, mobility won't ensure liberty. We need a deeper instinct, one that makes us more human. The seventh sense activates when we feel compelled to shape this network world rather than merely receive it.